Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 317 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. This is a ordinary show done by an ordinary guy, but hopefully you learn something from it, and I try to bring you the best I can every week about what's going on in the shooting world, the concealed carry world, sometimes the competition shooting world, and just a little bit of everything. Well, this week, I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio, the elegant, luxurious, high technology 2002 Honda Accord with 151,000 miles on this little bad boy. And this Handgun World mobile studio has been getting me around quite a bit with really good gas mileage. And it's paid for, just like all of our vehicles we have are paid for. So anyway, as I cruise and I head out to a place to shoot, which pretty much is the range that Ben and I use if we're conducting a San Antonio class, I'm going to interview Alan Houck. He is one of the managers of that shooting range. We might be able to get Kyle on here. He is the general manager of a place to shoot. And we're going to talk about what it's like to run a shooting range. We're also going to talk a little bit about open carry coming up, but I know that a lot of you don't live in Texas, and you might, I don't know how important that is to you. You probably live in a state that already has open carry, and if you don't, then, well, that's too bad. We are going to be getting open carry here. It sure looks like it anyway. I mean, the governor hasn't signed it, but I would say it's about a 96% certainty. At the time of recording this podcast, he hasn't signed it. I think it's about a 96% certainty that he is going to sign it. It is going to be licensed open carry. Thank you. Some of you sent me emails because I put out a question a few weeks ago. Just how is licensed open carry going to work? And some of you from licensed open carry states sent me some excellent emails, which I may cover next week on the show. Just talk a little bit about them because obviously it is working in other states. I would have liked to have seen just, you know, open carry. Open carry if you're over 21, not a convicted felon. If you can own a gun, you should be able to open carry. That I would have liked to have seen, but we'll get there. We'll get there. The licensed open carry is a good first step. You know, and as I've said many times, I probably won't open carry. But here's what I've started doing. I switched to outside the waistband carry, and I think that's going to be my primary mode of concealed carry now, outside the waistband. There's so many good holsters out there that do a real good job of helping me conceal my gun, even if I want to carry outside the waistband. 90% of the time, I'm wearing an untucked shirt, even for work. And if I've got to keep it real hidden while I'm working, then I'll switch to my M&P Shield or my Car PM9, or absolute worst case scenario, my Car Arms P380 in my pocket. However, it's so much more comfortable carrying outside the waistband. And it doesn't, you know, right now I'm carrying my Glock 26 today. It barely prints. You know, few people, unless they really know what to expect, few people are going to think that that's a gun. And besides that, I'm making a very, very good effort right now to conceal my firearm. I cannot be accused of intentionally showing my firearm. So as it stands right now, that's the way as I understand it, that the Texas law is. And then once open carry passes, seems to me like this is all going to be a moot point. Right? I mean, if I'm carrying outside the waistband, but I still have a shirt draped over my pistol, and if it shows just a little bit or somebody can see that it's a gun, but if we have legal open carry here, I don't believe that I'm doing anything wrong. You may want to set me straight if there's something different that I'm missing. So anyway, I really like it. I like it. I will inside the waistband carry. As most of you know, I'm a huge fan of appendix carry. And so that's probably, I'm still going to carry appendix quite a bit, especially when I carry my small guns. My Glock 19 doesn't work so well for me for appendix carry. And the M&P 9 Compact is just a little larger than I would like for appendix carry. But my 9mm shield is perfect. It's just right for appendix carry. And, of course, so is the CAR PM9. So, anyway, I thought I would throw that in there. Next, I want to let everybody know I'm feeling fairly decent. A lot of you keep messaging me and voicemailing me and stuff, wanting to know how am I doing, how am I feeling after some very, very nasty cancer treatments and a pretty tough battle with lymphoma. I'm feeling pretty good. So far, my body is still cancer-free. Praise the Lord. I go back the third week in May for more testing. 3 scans in 1 day. Oh, man. I got to lay in the tube half the day. Oh, it's ridiculous. PET scan, MRI, and CT scan. But they're going to be checking me over again to see if hopefully there's no more cancer cells still. I'm still on the road to recovery. It's a little tough. After a stem cell transplant, you know, my body got so beaten up. And, of course, you know, it's producing new cells. And they retrained my bone marrow to produce new, clean, healthy, non-cancerous cells, hopefully. So I'm just enjoying my second chance in life, folks. I have been given a second chance in life by God, and I am going to enjoy it and make the best of it that I possibly can, which includes in continuing to talk to you here on this podcast. Ben and I had a very successful class. I did make it to a training class to teach. Finally, last Saturday, we had 16 students up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for Beyond Concealed Carry, and it was a great class. That class ran very fast. Those people picked up the techniques very quickly. All right, let's get to my interview with Alan Houck over at A Place to Shoot about running a range and possibly some open carry stuff.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in 2 other homicides. These 2 items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Well, okay, for the main topic of this episode, I'm with Alan Houck. We are at A Place to Shoot. Welcome back to the show, Alan.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Bob.
Well, you're welcome. To everybody listening, I want to give a little bit of a background. Alan is, he's got his degree in accounting. He's also been here at A Place to Shoot kind of as one of the managers here for 4 years. Alan's a Texas CHL instructor, among many other things. Pretty decent shooter. I've had a chance to shoot with him. And Alan, you're pursuing a career in law enforcement, aren't you?
That's right, Bob. Hopefully, as much as I enjoy and love working out here, I think my real passion is actually lies in law enforcement.
You got to follow your passions. That's what you got to do. And you know, the cool thing about following your passion, I've said this, and listeners have heard this from me before. It doesn't feel like work.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, something that I talk about in my classes, and something that's been real influential in me is Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman's speech or article entitled, you know, sounds kind of rough, but On Killing. And it's not really necessarily about killing people, but it's about the type of people out there. And whenever I read it, it kind of all just clicked. And he talks about how, you know, there are wolves out there and there are sheep out there, but then there's also sheepdogs. And the first time I read that, I remember, and even as I'm talking about it now, the hair on the back of my neck kind of stands up a little bit, and it makes me realize that, you know what, it's okay and it's normal to, you know, be the protective person, to, you know, want to go out there and protect people and not, you know, stand by and let the wolves have their way.
Everyone likes a sheepdog. So congratulations on that. All right, well, we're going to talk about a couple subjects. Number one, we're going to talk about what it's like running a shooting range. And I think you got some pretty good stuff to share with that after 4 years of doing it. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about open carry that looks like there's a 95-96% chance that it's coming to Texas. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, all the research I've done, it's passed a couple of really important votes. The students should be signed off. But what I like to tell everybody is, you know, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. And I really want to, you know, caution everybody, don't do anything premature. Make sure that everything is good to go and is in effect before you strap on your, you know, six shooter and, you know, go to Walmart.
Well, and even if it does pass, which it's likely to do, there'll be a start date. And the start date, typically they do these things in the fall, like around September.
September has a lot of historical precedents. I was looking at some of the bills. I didn't see a whole lot of dates, but the one day I did see was January 1st, 2016. So that may actually be a start date, but then again, it may be September or any time in between.
Yeah, all right. That's a good way to answer that. All right, let's talk about running a shooting range. So a place to shoot has been here how long?
Oh, the place to shoot was started in, it was actually started before 1976 by a gentleman by the name of Ralph Voss, and it used to be at a different location, but then he bought some property on the south side of San Antonio and started the range anew, I guess you could say. His own land, his own property, got everything up and running. So the place to shoot has been here since 1976, and the current owner, Brock Wilkerson, he is a family friend of the Vosses. He basically bought the place out in 2011 and has been running it ever since.
Okay, good. Thanks for the brief history. So what's it like running a shooting range? What's one of the first things you want to talk about? And I really, before we do that, I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because a lot of people, when they go to a shooting range, I don't think they see much of the behind the scenes. You know, they show up, they got their guns, they got their ammo, they shoot, and they go home. What goes on behind the scenes?
Oh, a lot. I mean, and you know, with the place to shoot, not only are we a gun range, but we're also a gun store, full retail. And so kind of starting off with some of the retail stuff, probably one of the biggest challenges of running any gun store is supply and demand. You know, gun manufacturers spending a lot of money advertising new products that are coming out. And just because it's being advertised doesn't mean it's like in full run production. A lot of that stuff, you know, they'll do some limited runs here and there, make sure it's definitely going to be the hit that they all want it to be.
Like Glock 43s?
Oh, man, let me tell you about the Glock 43. It's kind of funny because as soon as they announced it, we started getting calls in, hey, do you got any of the Glock 43s yet? And we, to this day, we still haven't been able to see one actually inside the shop yet. So supply and demand is always difficult, and of course, the bigger chain stores do tend to get them first, because whenever, you know, you're Bass Pro and you're Gander Mountain, you know, you tend to buy the stuff by the cartload. And so, yeah, the manufacturers and distributors are going to make sure that you get yours taken care of. With us being a smaller mom-and-pop shop, we tend not to get stuff at the very, very beginning, but we should be getting some in fairly soon.
So keeping up with supply and demand is the hard part.
It really, really is. It's always a challenge. Whenever it's almost as if the manufacturers, by the time they start advertising their newest, latest, greatest thing, the one before is finally starting to catch up, but no one's really thinking about that anymore because they already started the advertising campaign on their next one. The same thing kind of happened with the Glock Model 42. Whenever that first came out, you know, people were crazy trying to get one. They were paying, you know, very, very big premium prices on it. By the time we got one in, you know, we were charging a normal percentage. We weren't gouging anybody. We weren't charging like $800 for them or anything like that. So it is kind of tough trying to stay on the cutting edge whenever you have limited resources and you're competing against, you know, the big box giants. But on the other side of that, though, it does lead us into better opportunities to have really good customer service, which that's always been the motto of our shop is customer service, customer service. Basically, educating customers and giving them what they want, and basically just treating them with respect. And a big thing around here is if you don't know as a sales associate, it's okay because someone in the shop should. And one of the things I think will distinguish us between a lot of the big box stores is the knowledge base of the employees. And once again, I mean, you walk into some of the bigger retails, and they have very knowledgeable people. I'm not knocking them at all. But pretty much every sales associate here is a subject matter expert in at least one field of shooting. You know, some of our guys know three gun. Some of our employees are really spun up on old classic revolvers. A good friend of mine, Larry Tate, has probably more knowledge about single action pistols than I know about pretty much everything else out there.
Yeah, he's your 1911 guru.
Well, actually, that's the other Larry.
Oh, that's the other Larry.
That's the other Larry. That Larry is our gunsmith, and yeah, I mean, we have an excellent gunsmith here, and if it's anything with a 1911, he can do it.
Yeah. All right, so now I want to talk about something that I don't know if it's going to be controversial or funny, but I'm sure you get some knuckleheads in here, some customer knuckleheads.
Oh, yeah. We get some really interesting characters in here. In fact, I had one guy that was obsessed with knockdown power. And he actually got a little, you know, rude about it, too, in terms of knockdown power in a handgun. And he was looking for a gun that he could go hog hunting with. And, you know, and I, you know, try to break to him gently. I said, well, sir, there really isn't a handgun out there that will guarantee that you knock a, you know, 250-pound hog over in one shot. I mean, you know, we can talk about penetration and stuff like that, but in terms of knocking off his feet, I don't think there's really anything out there.
He needs a 308 rifle.
Yeah, I mean, he needs something, you know, high, you know, a, you know, big bore rifle or something. But unfortunately, he wasn't really too happy with that response. And I was talking to another friend of mine about it later on. He said, well, next time they talk about knockdown power, tell me that what they really need is a high point. High point in 40. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, man, you tie a rope to that thing and swing it around, that thing will knock anybody over.
Oh, that's a good one. I haven't heard that one before. Can I borrow that?
Have at it, sir. Have at it.
Tie a rope around a high point and just nail them with it. That's good.
Oh, yeah. And so, and then, of course, you get other customers that, you know, they think it should be one way, but it's just not possible. I had another customer that bought a flashlight from us, you know, ripped the packaging open and, you know, put the batteries in backwards and, you know, the flashlight wouldn't turn on. And so he demanded a full refund. I said, well, sir, can I see it real quick? And I fixed it. The batteries were in straight and I turned it on. See, sir, it works fine. And at that point, I still want a refund. I said, well, sir, you know, the packaging is torn open. It's used now. We really can't sell as new merchandise. There's nothing wrong with it. I can swap it out for something. And he just really wasn't happy with that either. And, you know, there's only so much you can do as a mom-and-pop shop also. I mean, you know, I wish we did the volume that Walmart and stuff like that did, but we really just can't do all the stuff that Walmart and some of the big-box stores do, because if we start eating a lot of losses like that, it can really affect us. I mean, but fortunately for us, the irate customer really is few and far between. For the vast majority, yeah. 99% of our customers are great. They're wonderful. We build good relationships with a lot of return business here.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, those are few and far between.
You know, I want to say something right now, Alan. This is my 30th year in outside sales and marketing. That's my real job. In case people don't know, doing this podcast, not my real job. And I tell you what I've learned, in one important thing I've learned in 30 years of sales and marketing. And that is, the customer is not always right. And whoever came up with that philosophy that the customer is always right, the customer is not always right. You know, your customer with the flashlight. I'm not going to get into a lot of details, but I got a lot of customers who are not always right. And there comes a point in time where you do kind of have to put your foot down and say no, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. And eventually, while that customer was mad that day, he did come back, and he still frequents the shop every now and then. So, and like I tell a lot of my sales associates, sometimes you just have to realize that, hey, maybe that guy was just having a bad day. In fact, I had a really interesting one. A customer came out one time with his son, and they went out to go shoot. Both him and his son both shot. But with his rifle, he didn't know it at the time, and we didn't find out till the next day, but his scope is actually bent. And
his scope was what?
His scope is actually bent. And okay. I'll get to that part in a second, but he came out towards the evening. He had about an hour and a half to shoot, and like I said, both him and his son shot, and as he was leaving, about 10 minutes still, he said, yeah, I wasn't able to hit paper with my rifle. I'll come back tomorrow. I said, okay, not a problem, sir. Well, it'll just be another $10 shooting fee tomorrow, and you know, and you'll be good to go. And he basically blew up. I mean, he was just flabbergasted that because it was a different day, he would have to pay another $10 shooting fee, and his reasoning was he didn't hit paper. Well, he kind of got in a huff and stormed out, but the next day he came back in, and I was working again. He saw me. He's like, hey man, I am sorry about yesterday. I was just having a really bad day. I was tired. I was real hungry. And you know, I said it was water under the bridge. Don't worry about it. And so, like I said, you never know what the customer's coming in from.
That's true.
And so we do have to, you know, keep that in mind. And we do our best just to try to have an attitude of customer service out here. And every monthly meeting, man, the owner of the place is always preaching that to us. Customer service. And so far, so good, because we've really grown in the past 4 years that I've been here. Slow days now during the week are like, you know, busy days during the week, you know, 4 years ago when I first started. And so I think we've come a long way. And as we grow, we're able to better serve customers as well. You know, we're able to get stuff a little bit quicker because we're a little bit bigger and the distributors tend to pay us a little bit more attention. So yeah, customer service. And also, I mentioned earlier, educating. One of the things that we do our best is whenever we start off a sale, we do our best to try to ask the customer if they don't know what they already want. Well, what are you going to use the gun for? Is this going to be a home defense gun? Is this going to be a concealed carry gun? Is this going to be a take it to the range and plink gun? And so there's a lot of detail that we try to get, and so we can better fit the customer with the gun they're looking for. One of the things that kind of drives me crazy is whenever you get a real small frame, usually older petite lady in here, and you have family members telling them, "Oh, you just need a little revolver,
a little J-frame revolver." Like I was going to say, I thought it was a Place to Shoot's policy that if you're female, you have to buy a J-frame revolver.
No, that's not
the policy.
Far from it, sir.
Okay, because that seems to be some people's policy anyway.
Oh yeah, and they're under the impression that you know, because it's simple to operate, you don't have to practice with it. And I tell people, well, that's not really the case. And that little J-frame, especially the air weights, that's going to have a whole lot of kick to it. Not to mention, you have the issue of it only being five shots. And in a, you know, case of, we'll say, like a home invasion, if, you know, someone just blasts off five rounds real quick, and all of a sudden the gun's going click, 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 that puts them in a real bad situation that they have to reload quickly. And if they don't have any practice doing that, it could have really bad consequences.
Alan, hang on a second. You reminded me of something. You know, so many people think, oh, well, my daughter or my wife can't rack the slide on a semi-auto. I want to tell everybody right now, if you just come to the class that Ben and I teach, we'll have you racking that slide in an hour, and we'll have you doing it regularly. I don't care who you are. I don't care how old you are. I don't care how small you are. I don't care how weak your muscles are. Let me tell you what. My wife, until just about 6 months ago, and a lot of people may not know this, but maybe you do. My wife is suffering from ALS. So, you know, she has a degradation in her muscle strength. But even just 6 months ago, she could rack the slide on my Glock 19. It's all about technique, isn't it?
Oh, exactly, exactly. And a lot of people start off with a gun way out in front of them, and they're trying to pull that gun or their slide back. What they don't realize is we're a lot stronger pushing than we are pulling. And so a lot of people, about 90% of the people, when I show them this technique just real quickly, they're able to duplicate it. But you keep the gun close to you, you grab a hold of the slide, and then you push with your strong hand, and you push the bottom of the gun and just kind of pull back. So it's kind of a scissoring motion. But that helps out a lot. And at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people do decide to go with the semi-automatic. In fact, the Walther PK380 has probably one of the easiest slides out there to rack back. And so we've sold quite a few of those firearms based solely on that. But at the end of the day, you know, semi-autos aren't necessarily for everybody. And we do, we'll sell people what they want. And I taught an introduction handgun class where I had customers come through, or students, I should say, come through, and they would shoot four different firearms and four different calibers, usually like a Ruger Mark III, just so they can, you know, feel something without any recoil. And then the Walther PK380 was on there for quite a few classes. And later, whenever we got the Glock 42s, I put that, had that one in the rotation.
That's a lot of fun to shoot.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, there was also usually a Glock 19 and then a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm full size.
Never heard of Glock 19s, but I'd like to try one one day.
Yeah, right. You know, yo, Bob, I think you'd really like that one.
I might.
Oh, and then also, we would also have a snub-nosed revolver in there.
Yep.
Usually a Smith & Wesson, I believe is a Model 642 or also a Taurus Model 85.
The Smith 642 is a nice little revolver.
Oh, yeah, very, very nice. It's got that little curved backside on it, and oh, yeah, very, very nice for concealed carry. And you know, like I tell everybody, at the end of the day, it's what you like. And I actually had a older petite lady take the class one time, and at the end of it she said, you know what, I like that revolver the best. And I said, well, in that case, that's the one that you need to buy.
Yep. I'm considering getting a small revolver just because I don't have one, just because I can. Mm-hmm. And well, you know, I might carry it as a backup gun, but I'd kind of like to, I think I'm kind of leaning towards that way, and I'll get my Glock 43, you know, later on this year.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, definitely. And actually, you know what though, that is one of the other behind the scene deals that you're kind of talking about working at a gun shop. A lot of times we'll be able to get a good deal on a used gun. Now, the shop policy is customers do get first dibs, but if a used gun's been on the shelf for more than 60 days, at that point in time, an employee is able to purchase it at, you know, a discounted rate. And so working here, I have been able to, say, grow my collection. I think I went from two guns, and a few days ago, actually about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, my wife called me up, and she was doing some insurance stuff through our company and our property insurance, and she says, you know that you have over $5,000 worth of guns now? And I said, no, 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 honey. We have over $5,000 worth of guns now.
Well, that's a good start, Alan.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a good start. And, you know, with me moving on into law enforcement later on, I may have to, you know, pick up the pace a little bit here.
That's just like ammunition. You know, I'm running a little bit low. I think I'm like around 4,000 rounds of 9mm, and I'm a little low. And I've heard that there's some pretty good buys out there right now. I may have to jump on some of those.
Actually, yeah, there is. There is. And actually, speaking on the range, though, we just got a deal worked out with a company called Parabellum Research. They're a remanufacturer out of Buda, Texas. And we worked out a very good deal with them to where we're purchasing their ammunition now and selling it to our customers. And the long and short of it, we're able to actually be competitive with Academy, which is nice because we're helping out a local business. We've had great success with their ammunition. Of course, you know, we tested it out before, you know, we brought it in, and all that stuff ran fine. And we're talking to customers coming in from the range, and they're really loving everything out there. 9mm, 40, some 308, 223. And like I said, all our deals are competitive with Academy right now.
Yeah, that's terrific. All right, any other behind-the-scenes stuff?
Well, you know, there is a lot to it. I mean, I could probably spend a couple hours just making sure that, you know, we have enough targets, that inventory is reflective of what people are coming in and asking for. That we're carrying good quality merchandise. You know, we don't want to bring in cheap stuff. One thing you have to be really, really careful about is scopes, because unlike a lot of just straight retail places, we're also a gun range. And so a lot of times people come out, buy a scope from us, put it on the rifle, and take it right out to the range and test it and get sighted in.
Yeah,
and so we have to be really careful with what scopes we bring in because, you know, with them going right out there to the range, there's no disconnect. And if a scope ever does have an issue, we're always happy to help a customer out with it. We'll get it returned to the manufacturer. We'll let them know, hey, this is going on. And usually within 4 to 6 weeks, the scope is back, repaired, or a lot of times they'll just send a new scope.
Good. Alan, this is something I've always wondered. As someone who works at a shooting range, you ever have somebody come up to you or come to you and ask you to teach them how to shoot?
Yes, we do, pretty often. You know, and that kind of falls towards the range safety officers. It was actually the other part. I've talked about the retail side of it, but the range portion is another huge, huge part of running a range. And what we usually tell people is the range safety officers are there to make sure that you're being safe. And also we do give safety briefings inside. We go over the NRA 3 fundamental rules of safe firearm handling, which, you know, always keep the firearm pointed in a safe direction, always keep your finger off the trigger to ready to shoot, and always keep the firearm unloaded until you're ready to shoot. And we go into detail over that with the customer. But like we tell them, the range safety officers will help as much as they can, but just please keep in mind they have to keep an eye on the entire range, and so they can't stand out there with the customer for like 30 minutes giving them a one-on-one lesson. We do offer those opportunities here. In fact, several of the range employees, cell staff and RSOs are also instructors as well, and they're more than happy to give private lessons. They just have to arrange that with the customer. And so that's part of our mission here is to educate customers, not only in safety but proper marksmanship, which can lead to, going back to customer service, we have to realize that not everybody has a lot of education or training whenever it comes to shooting a firearm. We get a lot of customers out here that have never shot a gun before. They bought one from a store somewhere. They brought it out, and now they want to test fire it, which that's good. I'm glad that they're coming out here, and we do our best to train them and educate them. But it's important, though, that we make sure we don't get into that rut or that attitude of, oh, man, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, and it's very, very frustrating sometimes because especially when the customer doesn't want to learn or, hey, man, I've watched, you know, all the TV shows out there. I watch CSI. I know how to handle a gun. And so it can be very frustrating sometimes. But once again, keeping that attitude of service, we need to educate them because guess what? If we don't, nobody else is, and that could lead to someone getting seriously hurt. And so unfortunately, we do bump heads with customers sometimes. One of the big issues is on the handgun range, we require eye protection to be worn at all times. And we have customers walking out there, and the range safety officer will stop them. Hey, sir, can you put your glasses on? Oh, yeah. I'll do it in a minute. Or, well, hold on, I'm not shooting yet. Well, yes, sir, but the policy is you have to wear your glasses at all times.
Someone else's brass can still hit you in the eye.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, we have active shooters, and you have brass flying around and, you know, pop somebody in the eye or something. And so people don't always realize that the rules are there for their own safety. The other one is rapid fire. And that's one that, you know, I really wish we had a way that people could practice because, I mean, double tapping and things like that.
Sure.
But unfortunately, not everyone can handle that, especially with the new novice shooters. And rapid fire can become dangerous very quickly, especially if you don't have good muzzle control. People just start pulling the trigger, and next thing you know, the muzzle's, you know, well above the targets. And so, unfortunately, we don't allow rapid fire, or we can't allow rapid fire out here. And like I tell customers, you know, I know you, we'll say Tom, whatever his name is, you're a very good shooter. I've seen you shoot. I'm sure you can handle it. But we can't allow case-by-case basis because one person sees it, they want to do it, then they do it.
It gets contagious.
Yeah, almost, you know, monkey see, monkey do. And, you know, yep. People start basically trying to shoot beyond their abilities. And so those are probably our two biggest issues that we have on the range is just people not wanting to put their safety glasses on and people wanting to rapid fire. And maybe one day we may be able to accommodate proven shooters, I guess you could say. We're kicking around a few ideas later on, like maybe a membership where you have to go through safety training and prove, you know, your ability. But that's kind of down the road a ways.
Okay, Good. Before we shift gears into the open carry discussion and some other stuff, anything else you want to say about running a range?
Well, it is both very, very satisfying and sometimes makes you want to pull your hair out as well. But, that's kind of life.
Well, that's just dealing with the general public. I mean, I don't think a day goes by in my real job where I don't want to pull my hair out. But then an hour later, something fantastic. You know, I got an $87,000 order yesterday, but I was pulling my hair out until about 1:30. And then the email came in at a little after 2 with a PO for $87,000, I'm like, yeah!
Yeah, you know, it can be highs and lows sometimes, too. Sometimes, you know, you get a group of people that are just kind of ignorant of what they're doing. They don't realize, that those aren't toys in their hands. But then, you know, an hour later, you get a, you know, father and son or father and daughter that come out, and he's teaching his little girl how the fundamentals of marksmanship, and it's something that just, you're happy that you can be a part of that.
It's great to see that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, always. Yeah.
Or I bet you get to experience this a lot. The new shooters that maybe were not real big on guns, and all of a sudden, after about the second magazine, you can't get the smile off their face.
Oh, yeah, we see that pretty often. You get the people that are kind of apprehensive, you know, they're coming in, they're not quite sure, and a lot of times we start them off with a .22, and we ask them, well, how many boxes of ammunition do you want? Oh, I'll just take one. Okay, not a problem. You remember, you can come in and buy more. And, you know, about 20, 30 minutes later, they're coming in.
Here they come.
Yeah, I'll take a couple of boxes. Man, that was fun.
I'll take a couple more. I'm going to stay here for a while.
Well, and the other nice thing, actually, Bob, is international relations. We get people coming from all over the world. Europe, Asia, Australia, South America. I mean, just all over the place, coming in and renting guns from us.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and a lot of people, crazy, I don't know why they would do this, but they tend to associate Texas with shooting.
How come? What's the big deal about that? People think we're shooters here?
I guess. I don't know. But anyway, the crazy thing is we get people from all over the world, and they want to rent guns.
Yeah.
And so as long as, you know, there's no communication barriers, as long as they can display that they're able to safely handle the firearms, we'll rent them firearms, and they go out, and, you know, they enjoy themselves, and hopefully they can take that back to their home country and, you know, kind of preach a gospel a little bit. Hey, man, you know what? I shot, and that was pretty fun. It wasn't scary or dangerous at all.
And I was about 26 miles from downtown San Antonio, where a pretty interesting battle happened many, 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 many years ago, before it was downtown San Antonio, at some place that's now a huge tourist attraction.
Oh, what's that, the Alamode or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the Alamo.
Alamo, yeah.
That's interesting. They associate Texas with shooting. Yeah, go figure. Well, hey, and by the way, they also associate Texas with something that doesn't exist yet, and that's open carry. A lot of people who, it's amazing, even people in the United States don't realize that Texas yet allows open carry. But let's go ahead and shift gears. It looks like the legislature is pretty close to coming up with a final bill, and Governor Abbott's going to sign it. But, Alan, I've always admired your ability to keep up with the laws here and the legislature, and you've done your homework. So tell us where open carry is right now at the time that we're recording this on April 24th, 2015.
Okay. Well, they've had drafts of it passed both the House and the Senate. Nothing is in effect yet, and I kind of want to throw that disclaimer out there. Unfortunately, it's not passed yet. It hasn't been signed yet. And these things can change all the way up until literally the last minute due to, you know, political tricks and ploys and things like that. And, you know, it's kind of broken my heart the past couple of sessions of I was really pushing and hoping for concealed carry on campus, college campuses, that is. But unfortunately, it just never quite got there. And so,
what about this time?
Well, it's
I heard it's likely to pass.
That's Senate Bill 11. I want to say it has passed the Senate. I'm not following that one as closely as I am, but I'm hoping it will pass this time, finally get it through. Unfortunately, a lot of times, from my understanding, the past has kind of dropped in terms of quote-unquote political compromise. But hopefully we'll be able to get it through this time along with open carry.
Why do you think open carry is important? Because I think there's only about 6 states that don't allow it.
Yes, exactly.
And we're one of them.
Yep.
Why do you think that's important?
Well, I think it's important because it allows people to easily exercise their Second Amendment. It's a lot easier to open carry a handgun as opposed to a rifle or, you know, shotgun or something like that. And I'm all for, you know, open carry. I'm all for allowing it. I think it is a right that we should have. You know, it's kind of funny, though. Even though, and once again, I do allow, or I do believe that we should have the right, myself and a lot of other concealed handgun holders, in fact, all but a couple that I've talked to, have all said the same thing. Man, I hope it passes. I'm all for it. But I think I'm going to continue to conceal carry, though, in terms of it being more practical. And I like to give just a standard example. If I'm open carrying and I'm in a gas station picking up a gallon of milk and there's some, you know, strung out guy that's, you know, not in his right mind, he's planning on robbing the place, he may have just enough brain cells left to see that, well, man, I need my fix. Oh, man, that guy's got a gun. I'm going to have to kill him, and then I'm going to rob this place. And before I ever even know that there's a threat, you know, I'm taken out of the equation.
Well, that's conceivable. But I tell you what, I'm a huge fan of making sure that open carry comes to Texas. And I do want to correct something I said earlier. Open carry of long guns in Texas has been legal for a long time. I'm talking about handguns. And I've mentioned this many times, but I want to see open carry so that I don't have to worry about my gun accidentally showing.
Exactly, and that is, in my opinion, one of the biggest benefits to a concealed carry holder. If I'm in Walmart and I'm reaching for something on the top shelf and, you know, my gun accidentally becomes exposed, it's not an issue anymore. I don't have to worry about, you know, me losing my ability to conceal carry and protect myself because, you know, I get hung up in the legal system and I lose a court case. Now, granted, it's supposed to be the intentional display is what is illegal now, but you never know. I mean, I would still have to hire a lawyer. He'd have to defend me in court. If I get like a really anti-gun jury or something, I mean, I could really be in a lot of trouble. Now, with open carrying, that'll basically remove that from the equation, and I can still carry much more comfortable. My wife says that, you know, it would mean a lot to her for open carry because as a lady, you know, she wears a little bit, you know, tighter outfits than I do. Bob, you don't want to see me in a tank top, sir. Okay, it's not something that really pretty.
No, but I bet you like seeing your wife in a tight outfit.
Oh, exactly, exactly. And so that's something that'll allow her to feel more comfortable concealed carry because one of the reasons why she has to purse carry is because she's always so concerned about, you know, someone, you know, seeing her carrying a firearm.
Right.
And so that would, you know, make her feel a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I think that's a good example. I didn't even think about that. You know, women who like to wear clothes that they like to wear, and they don't have to worry about trying to conceal as much. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Texas did soften the law a little bit about your handgun printing. You know, what I've done, and I mentioned in the introduction, I've now switched to outside the waistband carry. And I think outside the waistband is going to be my primary mode going forward because even the way the law is today right now, they've softened the penalty because you have to intentionally display your gun. And I don't think if you look at me right now, I'm intentionally trying to display my gun.
Nope.
But once open carry is here, I think the Glock 19, Glock 17, M&P 9 compact, the full-size guns I think are going to go in my holster more.
Oh, definitely, definitely. In fact, I might even bust out the CZ-75.
There you go.
You carry that every now and then.
And watch some 44 Magnum revolvers will start popping up.
I think some of the cowboy shooters will appreciate the open carry.
Yeah.
Yep. But you know, though, Bob, whenever I was doing some research, I was looking up House Bill 910. And once again, nothing is set in stone yet, but I was looking at some of the possible amendments, some of the things that may change. And once again, I can't stress that enough. We won't know what the final law is until after it passes. But just some of the things that I was looking at, I found kind of interesting. They have a few amendments to the concealed carry and open carry. One of them is if someone violates a 30-06 sign, which in the state of Texas, a private property holder, either business or just private property, has a right to prevent people from concealed carrying on their business, and it mostly applies to businesses, by posting a 30-06 sign. And there's requirements for the sign. It has to be so big. It has to be in such and such colors.
The font size has to be a certain...
Yep. It has to be in contrasting colors displayed at the front of a building, basically. And they're talking about if someone violates a 30-06 sign, that is, if a business posts, you know, you're not supposed to conceal carry in here, and you violate that, they're talking about changing that violation of the law from a Class A misdemeanor, which you can serve up to a year in jail. They're talking about turning that into a Class C misdemeanor where you basically get a $200 ticket. However, they are making an exception if someone tells you, personally tells you, that you need to leave. At that point in time, it will still be a Class A misdemeanor. So you can still serve up to a year in jail. And which I thought that was really, really interesting. And
you'll probably have your CHL revoked for quite some time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, if you are convicted of a Class A misdemeanor in the state of Texas, your license is revoked for a total of 7 years.
Yeah.
Because it's 5 years from the date of conviction, and then they also, because you're a CHL holder, they also get you for another 2 years on top of that.
Yeah. Now, I also want to say something about open carry here in Texas. It's going to be licensed open carry. In other words, everybody with a CHL license can do it, not just anybody.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so you would still have to get the required training. And of course, I'm a little biased. I'm a CHL instructor, of course. But I think that is important that people be knowledgeable about the laws that are out there. And I know whenever I try to translate legalese, it could be tough even for me. That's one of the nice things about me being a member of Texas Law Shield is that I can just call their business line and talk to an actual lawyer about that. But there's a few other amendments in there I think are worth talking about. And once again, this is in House Bill 910. They also made a provision that a municipality of greater than 175,000 people can have a vote to ban open carry.
Okay, now wait a minute. Now, I read about that, but I heard that was defeated.
And it may have been. This is just what I saw, and it's very, very possible that it's been defeated.
I think it was in yesterday's news. I think it was yesterday's news. A couple politicians tried to have that amendment put in, which meant cities like San Antonio and Austin and anybody over, what, 150,000?
175,000 people could put it to a vote, and had it stayed in, it would have required an actual vote for that. In other words,
but I think that was defeated.
Yeah, and I hope so.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. There were some other things. For example, there was another amendment added that basically stated that a police officer cannot stop someone solely based on the fact that they were open carrying. Which, you know, I'm okay on that one way or the other. Once again, now... A lot of people that are against that are saying, "Oh, you're stopping police from being able to do their jobs." And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think it's just simply that there has to be something other than the fact that they have a firearm.
Well, if open carry becomes legal for CHL holders, then the citizen is doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So why would a police officer even get involved if this person is not suspected of breaking the law?
Yeah, exactly. Now, you know, if the person was, you know, open carrying and, you know, had a beer in their hand or something like that.
Different story.
Yeah, that's a whole different story because that's not solely because they had a firearm.
Or if they appeared to be threatening somebody with their firearm or something like that. That's a whole different story.
Exactly. If someone's standing there on the street corner yelling and, you know, cussing, then, yeah, that's not solely because they have the firearm. That's a whole other issue. And then one of the last things I saw in the House bill was they're talking about requiring some type of not only passive but active restraint as well, which would basically require some type of retention holster. At the very minimum, there's like some type of strap, which I'm ho-hum about. I mean, it's I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference, honestly. If you have a, you know, once again, just a leather strap, I guess a leather strap would be good. If you fell down, your gun's less likely to come out. But I think a lot of that boils down to, you know, people being responsible enough just to get a good quality holster to begin with, and that really shouldn't be an issue.
I'll tell you what, most of the really good quality holsters out there, your gun's not going to come out if you fall down. If you've got, unless you really loosen up the tension quite a bit, which you shouldn't be doing. Now, you know, my thought on the retention requirement, it might delay somebody by about a second if there's a gun grab. But think about the opposite side of that argument. It also delays the shooter. Mm-hmm. And it delays the citizen trying to defend himself by a second or so to get that gun out.
Yeah, exactly. So it is definitely a double-edged sword, and that actually kind of goes back to the Tueller drill, where, you know, and I talked about this in my CHL class about how a, you know, if a bad guy, will say, is within, I believe it's 21 feet, it's kind of a 50-50 coin toss on whether or not the police officer or good guy is able to get their gun out in time before the bad guy is able to reach them and make physical contact, which you go from, you know, possible gunfight into a physical struggle, which no one wants to have to go through that. And 21 feet is a pretty good distance. Now, and like I tell my students in my class, keep in mind that's with a police officer with a holster that's designed for them to quickly be able to draw it. Imagine as a concealed handgun holder that you're having to take that extra step of bringing your gun out of concealment, picking up a shirt, whatever, so that distance is probably a little bit farther back.
Or for you ladies out there that purse carry, dry fire practice at home and time yourself on how long does it take to get that gun out of your purse. You know, you ladies, you may think you can whip it out of there quickly, but just try it. You might be surprised.
Well, you know, Bob, I practice with my purse. I mean, my bag. But yeah, and it can definitely be a challenge.
My purse has a whole lot of extra ammo in it.
Well, I could tell my purse, it's not, or I could tell my wife, it's not a purse, it's my man bag.
It's your man. I got a man bag too. It's got a lot of ammo, a lot of magazines, a lot of bunch of other stuff in it too.
Oh yeah. But then also I was doing some research. I didn't go through all of it. I got a little bit more research to do, but I was looking at Senate Bill, and I don't even remember the number. It's, 17. Senate Bill 17, talks about adding, additional training to the CHL, class, which involves, talking about keeping a firearm in retention. Keeping a firearm in retention and having the correct type of holster. And so, you know, they may add a little bit to the required CHO course, which I'm all right with, you know, teaching some more stuff like that. But
you still got to keep it within 4 hours,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. They haven't made any mention of making the time go any longer.
Yeah, that's not going to change.
Yeah. So it should be interesting coming up with some good curriculum for that.
So you can't tell as many stories. You got to get the stuff in there about retention.
Exactly. Actually, whenever they reduced the hours from 10 total to 4 in the classroom plus range time,
that got rid of a lot of stories.
Yeah, unfortunately, that got rid of a lot of my more entertaining aspects of the class. but I think it was it Joe Friday from Dragnet? Just the facts.
Just the facts, man. Yeah, just the facts.
Exactly. But I am still able to do a good job with the class, and I throw a couple of entertaining stories in there just to try to relieve it. I know that Chapter 9 Penal Code Use of Force Law isn't the most interesting stuff in the world, but it is very, very important.
Yes.
And so we'll also be covering all that. But the whole aspect of having to cover firearm retention, to me, kind of shows how important it is to, or not necessarily how important, but why I am personally deciding to keep my handgun concealed anyway,
right?
Because that takes out the possibility of someone attacking me from behind and grabbing my gun. In fact, a quick story.
Well, it doesn't take it out, but it makes it more difficult.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? That's a good point. Yeah, because they can still take your gun even if it is concealed if they somehow figure out that you have it. But it reminds me of a story from back whenever I was a military police officer. I was working at a small military installation in Pennsylvania. And I was on duty one day, and a friend of mine from the barracks, she saw me while I was on duty in the local PX, and she came up behind me. She kind of grabbed me around the side and, almost like she was getting ready to attack me almost. But, you know, I turned around quickly, and she's like, "Oh, it's just me." And then she paused. She said, "You know, that probably wasn't a good idea while you were on duty, huh?"
Probably not.
I'm like, "No, probably not." So, yeah. And so if people do want to open carry, power to you. I'm not going to say anything negative about it. But once again, just keep in mind that you know, you may be drawing a little bit of attention, and just be very, very situationally aware, which we should all have good situational awareness anyway.
Yeah.
But just make sure you're being situationally aware and, you know, be very leery of anyone coming up behind you.
And there may come a day, who knows, because I always say I reserve the right to change my mind. Mm-hmm. And I have changed my mind on some mm-hmm. things. You never know. There may come a day where Bob Main will open carry at least sometimes. Who knows? But right now, I do prefer concealment.
Well, and you know, it's like that old saying, there's always an exception to the rule. Or, you know, and so, and I'm the same way. You know what? There may be a time or a certain situation that I may decide, you know what? It's more prudent for me to open carry.
Yeah. I mean, we always reserve the right to change our mind.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as we've got good reasons to back it up and not just changing it just because, but there's a method to the madness.
Exactly. Exactly. Not doing it just because it's cool.
Yeah, actually, but some people will do it because it's cool, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's all right. You and I are on the same page, as well as a lot of people listening, that, you know, we need to stop being one of the only few states that don't allow open carry, and it looks like at least, like I said, a huge chance that it's going to sign. And you know what? And Governor Abbott, our new governor here, has pledged that any bill that comes to him that expands gun rights, he's going to sign.
Oh, yeah. And I was really impressed with that statement whenever I first found out. In fact, I had to go and Google and double check. Yeah, he did say that. All right. Okay.
The previous governor did not.
No, no. Rick Perry never said anything about that. Although there is the story of Rick Perry actually having to use his concealed handgun, which is he was out for a run one morning and there was a coyote or wild dog or something that he had to how to defend himself and his pet from. And so that's why Ruger put out the LCP Texas edition or Coyote edition.
Texas, doesn't it have Rick's autograph or something on it?
Oh, it just got the little sketch of the coyote on the slide.
Oh, a sketch of the coyote on the slide. Yeah. That's great. Well, Alan, thanks very much. You're always well educated on what's going on politically in the legislature with our gun rights. Thank you very much. And thanks for sharing with us about running a range. For people that live here around San Antonio, any specials here at a place to shoot you want to talk about?
Well, we have ran something in the past, Bob, with you. We may have to revive the Bob Main coupon code where if you come out, you can get 20% off. We'll have to talk about that in a little bit and come up with some stuff. I think we still have all the stuff in the system for it.
Maybe we'll use the coupon code Open Carry. you know what? I noticed before we started this interview, you have a very big selection of handguns in there. Well, and rifles. You got a lot of just about everything. How about ammo? You got a bunch of ammo too, right?
Oh yeah, we got a 22, 9mm, 40, basically all the common stuff, and actually some of the oddball stuff too. I remember when I first started working here, I'd often get a call, hey, you got any, what was one of them? You know, I remember someone asking me, hey, you got any 218B? And I'm sitting there thinking, is that a firearm model? And I said, well, sir, is it a model? Who makes it? He's like, no, the ammunition. I said, well, hold on a second, sir, I'm going to go check. And I looked in one of the little dusty corners, and sure enough, we had a box of 218B.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, even if it is some of the oddball stuff, we don't have a complete selection, but we have a lot of the oddball stuff as well.
Well, thanks for coming on my show. Good luck with you and your law enforcement career. I have no doubt you're going to make a good one. I made a comment before. I said, those of you in law enforcement, you guys don't get paid enough for what you do. And I really admire what you do, and I think that's great. That's awesome that you're pursuing that. What's your preference? What do you want to do in law enforcement?
Well, I'd really like to get into the federal side and do a lot of the investigations. Really, more with like the national security aspect of it, things like that. Once again, I did serve in the military, and I'd kind of like to continue what I did in the military in the federal law enforcement. And then on the other side, if I do end up in on the state level, you know, each of them has their advantages, but with the state level, it'd mean I get to stay in my beloved home state of Texas.
Yes.
And, you know, so like I said, each of them has their possibilities. So, yeah, either one would be great. And, you know, I know sometimes people kind of get the wrong impression that, you know, law enforcement there is just to violate their civil rights. And, you know, that's really not the case. I think, you know, a good law enforcement officer is there to serve the people. And unfortunately, there are a few bad apples that, you know, tend to spoil the crate. But it's been my personal experience that those people really, really are few and far between. You know, my brother-in-law is a police officer, and like he says, you know, I'm all for people concealed carrying because it makes my job that much easier. And actually, he was recently promoted to a chief position, and so that's, you know, that's one chief police I know that is for open carry. And then also another good example, a few days ago, my wife was pulled over for speeding, and she was speeding. She admitted to it. She was going about 9 over, and a police officer pulled over, and he and my wife, you know, followed the law and said, I am a concealed handgun license holder, and I do have my license. And the police officer said, well, do you have your firearm with you? And shame on my wife. She didn't have the gun in the vehicle with her. She said, no, I left it in my safe this morning. And the police officer really, you know, like I said, just gave her a verbal warning about the 9 miles per hour over. But he did kind of chide her a little bit. Well, you know, you need to have your gun with you. It's important that you're able to protect yourself.
Nice.
And so,
very nice.
So he did my job for me.
Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it. Good job.
Thanks, Bob.
Now, before I conclude this episode, I do want to mention that Jason Christensen at Concealment Solutions has some pretty cool new holsters out. Jason doesn't sponsor the show, but as you know, I use his products a lot, and I'm a huge fan of what he makes. The Black Mamba holster, if you're going to be carrying strong side inside the waistband. I really like his ASP, appendix-specific platform. He's now got a third version out that's all Kydex. Since I've switched to outside the waistband carry, Jason's sending me a couple of his all Kydex Cobra holsters for testing and evaluation. Thank you, Jason, at concealmentsolutions.com. I'll be doing a podcast review and a YouTube review on those because Jason claims that for an outside-the-waistband holster, they really hold your pistol tight to the body so that it's a lot easier to conceal. I'm going to order another one for my Glock 26, so I'm going to test out that Cobra with three different pistols, my Shield 9mm and my M&P9 compact and my Glock 26. So, way to go, Jason. He continues to innovate and get stuff out there. You know, I tell you what, I just can't say enough about good stuff about the work that he does. If you're looking for a very, very quality, but not very expensive holster, check out www.concealmentsolutions.com. Also want to mention that there are still, I think, a couple of spots left in our Sioux Falls Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced 2-day class. Ben and I are traveling up there, and we are going to team up with Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast and teach an awesome class. If you want to find out what's going on in that class, check my website out. In Ohio, we are going to be there in September in Ohio, not very far from Canton. So for you shooters that are in that geographical area and you want to come train with us in Ohio, check that out. That's coming up in September. In November, Chaz from the Road Gunner podcast is coming down to San Antonio, the Alamo City, home of the defending champion, San Antonio Spurs, the defending NBA champions. I don't know about this year, but right now they are the defending NBA champions. Okay, I got off track. Chaz Murray from the Road Gunner podcast is coming down, and also Tracy Thronberg, who is a staff instructor with, I think it's KRT training in Austin. The two of them and Ben and I are teaching up, and we are going to teach an advanced level class. We're calling it Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2. That curriculum and class sign-up is already up at handgunworld.com. Let me tell you something. We have already got sign-ups for that class, and it's not till November. So that's probably going to fill up pretty quickly. And there are spots left for Seattle out in Squim. That's getting almost half full. Glenn Tate and probably Powell, maybe one or two other members of the team. They're going to train with us for 2 days in August out on the Olympic Peninsula at Fort Discovery in Squim. And if you sign up for that class and you're one of the first 14 people, you can get free lodging in the bunkhouse if you want. There's a really cool bunkhouse there. And we used it last year. It's a nice place. Even has Wi-Fi in it. Can you believe that? It's a bunkhouse right there at the range, so there's no commuting back and forth to the range. And there's no charge for that if you want to hang out. And everybody gets their own, you know, either top half or bottom half of a bunk bed. And I think you're going to like the bunkhouse if you stay there. Fort Discovery is just a really cool place out there in western Washington. It should be real nice weather the first week in August. It sure was last year. We put some new videos up at the Shooters Club. A couple of new videos. There'll be another one coming shortly. So if you're not a member of our Shooters Club, what are you waiting for? For $8 a month or $75 a year, you can really look at some very, very good content that Ben Branham and I have put together on video. It doesn't take the place of training, but boy, it's a great reminder of a lot of techniques and things that you can do to defend yourself with a handgun and with a rifle. We got some rifle stuff on there as well. And certainly, I want to thank everybody for your support on my Amazon store. You don't have to spend an extra dollar to support this show if you like what I do. All you have to do is when you make your Amazon purchases, just please use my Amazon Associates link. And that can be found by going to handgunworld.com, clicking the Amazon store, and follow that link, save it, whatever. Make your purchases that way on Amazon, and proceeds will help support the show. All right, just another real quick break, and then I've got something for the conclusion of this episode.
When did you first know about the program, officially, I believe, called Fast and Furious? To the best of your knowledge, what date?
I'm not sure of the exact date, but I probably heard about Fast and Furious for the first time over the last few weeks.
How about the head of the criminal division, sure, Lanny Brewer? Did he authorize it?
I'm not sure whether Mr. Brewer authorized it. I mean, you have to understand the way in which the department operates. Although there are operations, this one has gotten a great deal of publicity.
Yeah, there are dead Americans as a result of this failed and reckless program. So I would say that it hasn't gotten enough attention, has it, Mr. Attorney General?
It's not necessarily. I mean, there's an investigation that is underway, and we'll have to look at that to see exactly what happened with regard to...
Well, Mr. Attorney General...
I take very seriously the allegations...
Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously... Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously a subpoena signed by the Clerk of the House?
Of course.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, isn't it true that those cases that will go to trial in June, I have very limited time, I'm sorry, those cases are basically a bunch of meth addicts who did the buying, that you do not have what this program was supposed to produce. You don't have the kingpins. You don't have the places it went. What you have are the people that you already had on videotape many, many months before indictments were brought. Isn't this true?
There are cases that are important that we are trying to bring, that we want to try successfully, and they are part of a scheme. They are part of a scheme. You can't look at a case and it's an individual matter and think it is unimportant, because small cases lead to larger ones.
We're looking at you, straw purchasers. We're looking at you. We're looking at your key people who knew or should have known about this, and whether or not your judgment was consistent with good practices, and whether or not instead the Justice Department is basically guilty of allowing weapons to kill Americans and Mexicans. So will you agree to cooperate that investigation both on the House and Senate side?
We'll certainly cooperate with all the investigations, but I'm going to take great exception to what you just said. The notion that somehow or other this Justice Department is responsible for those deaths that you mentioned, that assertion is offensive. And I want to tell you that...
But what if it's accurate, Mr. Attorney General?
It is the policy of the Justice Department to make sure that we do all that we can to protect law enforcement agents. It is one of the reasons why I have tried to look at, you know, a whole variety of methods, techniques that we can use to protect the lives of law enforcement agents. It is something that this country is not focused enough on.
What am I going to tell Agent Terry's mother about how he died at the hand of a gun that was videotaped as it was sold to a straw purchaser, fully expecting it to end up in the hands of drug cartels?
Well, you know, one will have to see exactly what happened with regard to the guns that are at issue there. And I've attended the funerals, you know. This is something that, this isn't theoretical, this is not political, this is extremely real for me as Attorney General.
It is for us, too.
Well, many thanks to Alan Houck at A Place to Shoot. That was a great interview, informative stuff there, and I hope that you got something from it. In closing, I would like to just remind everybody, take somebody shooting. Take a new shooter. Take somebody who's never shot a gun before shooting. Take an anti-gun person. See if you can get him to join you at the range, even if it's only for 30 minutes and press the trigger. You know, there's nothing like getting out there to the range. Buy ammo. I'm going to be getting online probably today or tomorrow and ordering probably a case of 9mm pretty quickly. I just picked up a real nice box of 22 ammo at Sparks Firearms in San Antonio, where Ben works. So buy ammo, buy ammo, buy ammo. You never know what's going to happen. You never know when we might have the next Sandy Hook event. So buy ammo and get training. Hold off a little bit on your gun purchases and get ammo and training. That's just kind of my thoughts. I mean, there's all kinds of guns I'd love to have. You know, I'd like to have a Glock 43. Like to have a revolver, probably a J-frame revolver, even though those aren't very expensive. You never know, I might pick up one of those. Like to have another big fancy schmancy 1911. I mean, there's all kinds of things. Like to have another AR-15. But you know, what's most important is that I can get the most out of what I already own and be able to use it when that crappy day comes that we all hope never comes. So that's my thoughts on that. Thanks for listening to another episode. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember that the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.